This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this episode is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And in this week's episode, we're going to kick off with a film called Search and Destroy. And then we're going to go to The Fifth Execution, which is going to be a very interesting film to talk about. Our short shot this week is Cargo. And then our DTV throwback is Shakedown. So without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review then is Search and Destroy. When American Ranger John Cutter fails to save a family being held hostage and loses his entire team in a battle with infamous Ukrainian arms dealer Igor Rodin, John is discharged from the army. 3 years later, he is approached by his old general to go on a private contract mission when Igor resurfaces. This is an interesting film, Rich.
It is. It is interesting.
It's a very interesting film. One of the things that makes it interesting, ages and ages ago on the Smoking Lamb podcast that we used to do, I got into a conversation with one of our guests about how sort of gays are represented in films. And I sort of said, you know, eventually I'd love to see an action movie where the hero is gay, you know, without sort of being too over about it. You know, just have it accepted that the character is gay. And I think whether it means to or not, I think Search and Destroy comes very close to that, because it takes the bromance element of these, you know, the sort of machismo to the nth degree. There are scenes where sort of characters are sort of looking longingly at each other, and it's like, yeah, this goes beyond a bit of sort of professional respect. You know what I mean?
I hadn't really picked up on that, but
this is my reading on it.
Obviously, there is that montage, you know, song sequence where he's wistfully thinking back on stuff that's happened over the previous half an hour in the film.
A very weird choice, that really is a very strange choice. But you know, there's this friendship that he develops with one of the SEAL team members, and it does seem to go a little bit beyond sort of the usual sort of buddy friendship that you'd get in this sort of film. You know, it's just the way it's played. You know, whether or not I'm reading too much into it or not, does it matter? No, not at all. But it was just interesting to see. Now, the film itself, you know, I thought this was pretty well handled for the most part. Where was it shot, Rich?
Because Bulgaria, probably.
Did you stick around? No, this is me saying to you, did you stick around for the end credits?
Yeah.
Because there's a sort of lengthy, sort of like, almost like a documentary sort of behind the scenes thing going on where sort of various of the sort of local cast members are saying how great it is to be part of an American film and things like that, which is quite interesting as well. Action-wise, I thought this was relatively well handled. Some good sort of close quarters stuff going on, some good sort of battle scenes. There are some very unintentionally funny bits.
Is it unintentional though? That's the question.
Okay. No, that'd be interesting. There's a character in this who's got the stupidest name I've ever heard, called Danimal. Danimal, okay, one of the SEAL team members, and he dies in the most stupidest way possible. It really, you know, it's a really funny scene where these guys are sort of scuba diving. And John Cutter, who's sort of there, sort of going, oh, you know, keep it tight, guys, and all this sort of shit, which I thought was like really unprofessional anyway, because he's like, you know, these guys are SEAL team members, and he's like an Army Ranger or something, and, you know, he's done a bit of scuba diving, but these guys live and breathe it, and he's telling them to keep it tight. So, you know, and this guy sort of takes real offense at it, and so like they have this big argument while they're swimming, which is quite funny. I'm intrigued now, Rich. You say this may have been intentionally sort of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the tone is just really off. I mean, when the film starts, it's got this really cheesy opening track cut to footage of people on the beach and stuff, and it's a really catchy track. The music is one of the best things about this film, and the track, even though it sounds a bit, it's not the best produced track, but it's got that 80s kind of sound, and it's got great hook, and I have been listening to it, and I've had it in my head and stuff, and it's called Straight to the Edge by the band Cal Vilma.
I mean, and yeah, the, so, but so then, sort then of smash cut.
Yeah, the credits end, and then it says, meanwhile, on the other side of town. Yeah. And then there's all these other bit weird sound effects used for transitions and stuff that they do.
Yeah. And then you get sort of the thing that, it's one of my pet peeves, the names pop up next to the characters, and then they're dead within like 2 minutes later, which is like, ridiculous. But we do have a really interesting bad guy in this called Igor Rodin, or Rodin. He is quite interesting.
He was in Attrition.
Yes.
He was Hollywood, I think his name was in that. He's a big Russian guy.
Yeah. He's really good in this. And he's got this sort of very sort of sardonic sort of approach to the job he's doing, which is quite amusing. There's a bit where he kills somebody, one of these scientists, and the other two scientists go, well, why should we carry on working with you? Because you're just going to kill us. He goes, no, I killed him because we didn't need him. I still need you guys. This is going to work or it isn't. So, it was an interesting sort of, outlook that he has. But, yeah, I just thoroughly enjoyed this, I must admit.
Yeah, they've given the film a soundtrack as if it was Commando Ninja.
Mm.
So it's like this heavy synthwave soundtrack by Lucas Baker and Tyler Forrest, and it's although it evokes, it's that kind of music that evokes the 80s and stuff, it's not music that's actually that common,
no,
in my experience too, though. It's common to our idea of what those films were like, but synthwave is really a modern music that is inspired by the 80s, but I mean the music's great and the action's sort of exciting and stuff, but there are these dialogue scenes which I can't tell whether they are cheesy by mistake, not intentionally cheesy, or
by design.
By design, yeah, because there's like an exchange between Cutter and a guy on the, that commanding officer or whatever on the sub. And it is almost comical. It's not funny, but it just sort of seems a bit on the nose, And then we got other bits like, hang on. So the, there's, oh, I can't remember, but so there's like, there's this transition where there's a xylophone sound effect and stuff. It's just like, that's such a silly thing to use.
I didn't pick up on that, I must admit.
There's the convention of the thing is that the plot is following films like US Seals 2, where the hero has had something bad happen, he's sort of gone off, and then his commanding officer, in the style of Colonel Troutman or whatever, comes to get him to go back on a special mission, stuff. It's touching all the bases, and you're just thinking, is it supposed to be a joke or whatever? And a lot of people, what I've read online is like, it's supposed to be, it's self-aware and, it's trying to be, but I'm not sure whether that was the original intent.
I'm not sure if it is, maybe afterwards they went, of course we're in on the joke sort of thing. I didn't find this any sillier than something like US Seals 2. I thought it was on that sort of level, really. So, yeah.
So we got the freeze frame intro cards or whatever, and the the interesting thing about this is it's only just come out last year. In the last few months, came out at the end of 2020. It was actually shot in 2014.
Wow.
One of the signifiers that it was quite old is, one, it unusually stars Leslie Grantham, Dirty Den from EastEnders, and who died several years ago. But also it was directed by Danny Lerner, who also died several years ago. He shot the film wrapped in 2014, at which point Danny Lerner was already very ill with cancer. Mm. And he died in 2015, shortly after the first cut of the film was completed.
Right.
And then it basically, the film was sort of set aside and left unfinished until
Do you think that's why we've got that black and white montage sequence in there as well, just to sort of pad out the running time a bit, sort of, you know, paste over a couple of
I think cracks. What they've done is the original intent, from what I've read online, is that the film was designed to be built around footage from old New Image action movies.
All right.
Which is not the first time they've done that. They did it with Ticker, which had Steven Seagal in it.
Yeah.
And various, you know, and Today You Die, they recycled it. They recycle a lot of their footage in other movies that they make. And this one has a number. I don't know if you saw it, but there's a shot from Danger Zone that we watched a couple of weeks ago with Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa standing by a train. And I was like, I gotta be, that's Danger Zone. But there's footage from loads of film, including a lot of the footage comes from one called Death Train, which was
Pierce Brosnan one.
No, there was another one with in 2003, I think it was, with Brian Genesee, which Die Hard on a Train kind of thing. Unfortunately, I've never actually been able to see it, but I thought, I'm sure I've seen this footage before. I mean, you know, it must come from something else. So I looked up the trailer for Death Train, and sure enough, the money shot and whatever that are in the trailer are in this film.
Yeah, I had noticed that at all because I haven't seen a lot of like New Image's back catalogue, but I thought all that train stuff worked quite well. I mean, obviously, there is a bit of a contrast with some of the internal shots and
The interiors.
The character of John Cutter, I think, is pretty decent. You know, he can handle himself, which is something you always want to see out of your hero.
How did you feel about Leslie Grantham? It's unusual for him to see him in this kind of role, playing an American. I mean, his accent is all over the place in this.
Who was he? Was it the general?
He's the general. Yeah, you didn't recognize him.
I didn't recognize him.
Oh, okay. We only just saw him in Vengeance.
That's true. With
Billy Murray a few weeks ago. He made both films around the same time, but he's, you know, British actor, famous for being soap opera and stuff, not really around very much. Suddenly he's in this Bulgarian action movie playing an American character. So, and he can't keep the American accent at all. But I thought that gave a sort of novel, that was a novel feature for me, seeing him in there. I thought the rest of the cast were fine. Like you say, the bad guy, Sergei, I think is his name, playing the
Sergei Badjuk.
Yeah, the film. It's unusual when say that the music is what was brought in when they were doing a new edit of the film to finish it off. They said, right, we want to go for a particular tone and stuff. So then this is the point they brought these guys in to give it this synthwave soundtrack. It would have had a more traditional. I have no doubt that it would have had a more traditional action film score had it come out around the time that it was originally made. Originally, by the way, it was called A Passage to Hell.
All right.
That was the original title, what it was shot under.
Wouldn't have had such a catchy song though.
No, well, that's one of the things that makes me think, well, I don't think it was originally intended to be a tongue-in-cheek, self-aware, you know, almost parody of New Image action films. I think they've tried to layer that on with mixed results, because I think it just makes it a bit tonally confusing. The music is really good. You can buy the soundtrack, you can get it, you can listen to it on YouTube and stuff. It's really good, some really great tracks. that's probably the best thing about it. The film ends a bit early, as you've said, because it stops after 80 minutes, and then it becomes an almost 10-minute tribute behind the scenes documentary, which was also quite unusual.
Yeah, it is very unusual. I mean, I haven't seen that since that one with Richard Hatch, the short that we covered.
Blade of Honor.
That's it.
Yeah, but that was quite interesting in itself, because you don't, unless you look up, try to find some clips or whatever on YouTube, you don't really get the behind the scenes stuff. So that gave a little something extra to sort. And they were all speaking very well of Danny Lerner, and the stuff I found online also says, you know, that he was very good to work with. You know, he was an exploitation filmmaker, but you know, he knew what he wanted. He was very good to get on with and stuff, and everyone seems genuinely pleased to have had the chance to have worked with him. So I thought that it's quite a reasonable swan song and a nice sort of tribute that they've done in completing the film. I always thought it was weird that it never materialized until now. I mean, I think if they'd have released it in its original, what I suppose was its original form, as a straight action movie, I think it would have been absolutely fine. So I don't quite understand what the issue was. I would have rather it had been that straight action movie rather than adding in, oh, let's add some graphics that say, you know, the end for now and stuff like that, you know, and those comical sound effects and weird things, because they don't really work. But there's little scenes like, I'm going back to the sort of self-awareness, you know, like the underwater scene, and there's a couple of the henchmen, whatever, and they're like having this meaningless conversation. What are these guys talking about? I'm going out to such and such.
There's another sort of gay thing, because it's sort of going, oh, I'm going to the discotheque and I'm taking my sort of boyfriend with me or something, or, you know, something along those sort of lines. Or, are you coming to the discotheque this weekend?
But I think that was all done, you know, that's not a recorded dialogue scene. That's like something they potentially done as an ADR thing and like added it in.
Well, I think it was just subtitled, wasn't it? I think it was actually in whatever language they're speaking in.
I can't remember.
They could have just put any subtitles over the top.
I mean, it's an interesting, if you're for action movie fans and new, you know, fans of New Image, people who've enjoyed Danny Lerner's movies and you know, people who've enjoyed things like Commando Ninja and stuff like that, I think it's still worth watching, even though it doesn't quite tick all the boxes for either camp. The soundtrack is excellent. I think the synth stuff is excellent. There's some other music, like the Search and Destroy song, which
Search and Destroy.
It's like a gentle ballad which plays over there. That's pretty cheesy. Is that the intention? Was that what they were going for? I don't know. That's what's fascinating about the film, I think. And a lot of fun. So yeah, well worth seeing.
It certainly is. How are we going to score it?
What are you going to score it? I'm going to score it I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 just for curiosity value, I think.
Absolutely. I'm giving it a 7 as well. Just go with it. You know, it's an interesting film. It's definitely got some sort of homoerotic overtones to it. Or is that just me? Maybe I'm reading too much into it. What am I bringing to the film, indeed? What baggage is Mike bringing to this? I definitely read something in there. So 2 sevens for Search and Destroy. It's a lot of fun. It's on Amazon Prime. Check it out. Our next review is The Fifth Execution, also known as Klutch Salamandri. I'm reading this from IMDb, and it's a bit of a crawl, so bear with me. On a remote island in Southeast Asia, a team of scientists studying the regenerative properties of the salamander discovers what their Bangkok headquarters refer to as the priceless gift an elixir of life. News of the discovery travels quickly and profiteers begin to circle the island, only to find out just how dangerous a discovery it is. During the research process, they've also uncovered an unstoppable disease. When the research team goes missing, it leaves behind a warning that the disease has spread and is threatening to go global. Special forces and mercenaries from around the world descend on the island, making apparent that there is more at stake than just profit and ambition, but the survival of humanity. This film is a fucking mess, Rich.
Wow. You've just explained a lot more than I think the film did.
Absolutely. Yes. So this, I'm guessing here, this is a co-production between Russia and Thailand.
I'm not sure, but I think it's
or something.
It's certainly primarily Russian, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's kind of quite international, really, because I mean, in terms of the production, in terms of the location, it's like Thailand. We've got a Korean actor in there as well, and also, I mean, interestingly, the leader of the Russian Special Forces is a Polish actor called Paweł Deleu. He's done a lot of this stuff. I mean, I think, I don't know if he speaks Russian, but he's done a lot of Russian films, even though he's Polish. But I thought that was quite interesting. But yeah, we're in Code of Cain, Diamond Cartel kind of
time. We certainly are.
And what you've said there with that title, that other title you mentioned, that's actually the Polish title.
Oh, okay.
That means Salamander Key.
Yeah.
So it's like but I think the original title is Fifth Execution. So what have we got here? We've got several different plot threads. It's basically at the heart of it. It's got a lot in common with Search and Destroy. It's a men on a mission movie.
Yeah.
They go to the. Something bad's happened at this island, a bit like US SEALs too, you know, something's going down on an island, so the team have got to get together. He gets called back, because he was in his truck, driving his truck, and he gets called in to come back to do a new mission, and the team get together, they go, and each of the team, the different members of the team, they've got different character dynamics and stories and stuff going on, so they go over there. But before that, we've had a scientist making a discovery and a village being assaulted. Michael Madsen coming in with his mercenaries and killing everyone. But even before that, I think we've got Rutger Hauer. Doing a sort of weird intro, you're not really sure what's going on. and so the film basically cuts between these three things throughout its running time. So the men on a mission bit is kind of, it is the main bit, but we spend a lot of time with other aspects. There's a whole police investigation bit in Thailand with the Thai cop.
Well that's because
you got nowhere.
you got all these council members committing suicide in weird ways. You know, so one guy sort of jumps off a skyrise and things like this. You know,
but there's all these assassinations happening, isn't there? And he's investigating it. And he goes to speak to Rutger Hauer and whatever. And there's a bit that happens. I think he gets attacked because you think this guy in the background who's following him is going to attack him, and then it's not actually that; it's something else. But the police. So there's this moment: the cop gets killed because he's got some information or whatever. Mm. But they don't take it. They leave it. And
then the junkie finds it.
The junkie takes it.
And injects himself with it. It's a case of, well, is that the tainted version or is it the pure version? Because there's the tainted version. They've now got an outbreak in Thailand of this disease, which everyone else is fighting for over on this island to try and contain.
Yeah. But that was kind of what I was thinking. Is he... Because we see this character and he dies, and I thought, is that the instigating moment that, you know, things really kick off in Thailand or whatever? But no, that actually goes nowhere. It's really odd. I can't say I didn't enjoy it. I think it's a really entertaining film. There's a lot going on. Some of the action's really good. Some of the action's really good. It's really well handled. Michael Madsen is giving all in his, you know, typical half, well, I say giving it all, you know, half, a lot of Michael Madsen is kind of phoning it in, but that's kind of the charm. But he's giving it his best phoning it in performance, I suppose I could say. But as the baddie, and
overseeing a lot of evil, basically, is the sort of thing that he does well. You know,
so, he's a bad guy. He's got a tiger on a chain. Yeah. You know, that's how bad he is.
That's it. There is some really good action in here. There's a great little fight. There's the bald Russian guy, the big bulky one, who ends up sort of like fighting these guys by a river.
Oh, he's an I think he's an MMA UFC.
Because he can't act for shit, but he's pretty good at the screen fighting stuff. That's
a good scene though, isn't it? Because the camera holds back, and you can see what he's doing. They don't cut. It's a lot of it's wide angles. He's throwing the guys around and stuff. I thought it was really I thought it was really well put together.
There's a lot of characters in this. So not only do we have the actual soldiers on a mission bit who are a mix of Russian, and as you say, there's a Korean guy in there as well. But also there's these three scientists, two guys and a woman, and the woman and one of the guys are in a relationship, whereas the other guy, the sort of computer nerd guy who's sort of stuck there, you know, basically the computer guy is he's sort of like the Nick Cage character from The Rock. You know, and the film could easily be spun on that. You know, if you did that, an American remake, you could put like Nick Cage in that character, or someone like that, John Cusack or someone, and sort of play it from their perspective quite easily. But I just thought it was really, really good. That whole bit where, you know, the computer guy gets kidnapped and they have to go and rescue him, and that whole rescue bit I thought was superb, just really well done.
Is that the bit? Because I've made some notes. I've got laboratory rescue, cardiac arrest, revived.
Oh, that was so fucking stupid.
And then it says revived only to die in explosion.
Yep.
I can't remember exactly what happened, but it basically rendered the whole thing kind of pointless.
It was absolutely stupid. It was like so two of the characters. What this woman gets kind of blown up or caught in an explosion, and it has as you say, cardiac arrest. Her fiance or boyfriend or whatever the fuck he is rushes her to another room where he could have escaped with everyone else, but he says, no, I'm going to revive her. And then like 2 seconds after he's revived her, the whole thing explodes anyway. So it's this really weirdly selfish act. It's like, I brought you back to life so I could die with you. You know,
I remember now.
It's really bizarre. In some ways, this film has similarities to Blackout that we covered, in that there's this very sort of dark nihilistic streak to what happens to certain characters. You know, it's I think it's like the Russian outlook on life. Basically, it's it's very sort of like very pessimistic in a way. And it's a stupid bit at the end where, you know, it's sort of some of the soldiers make a last stand on the beach so the rest can escape. And then one of the guys who's escaping goes, "No, I'm going to die on the beach with you."
Well, that's the thing, is that the movie's kind of got this whole heroic bloodshed thing that comes in at the end with the Korean soldier,
the Korean guy,
exacting his retribution and stuff, and that's quite well done. But the weird thing about that last stand on the beach is kind of it builds up, and we see all these. You know, Michael Madsen mobilizes his mercenaries in their trucks and whatever, and it doesn't really go anywhere we're gonna stand now, and they get ready for it, and then the action cuts away, so we never actually see what happens. It's kind of a Rogue One kind of situation, they go out on the boat, I think, and one of the things that I wasn't sure about was they get a really short way out into the water and then fire a flare in broad daylight.
Well, because I think one of the soldiers says, you know, so when you hear the helicopter or something, you know, then fire the flare. but she fires it so early, and it's almost like, well, I hope there's a helicopter nearby to see this flare.
Well, and also, if they could see the flare, they'll see
the fucking boat.
The boat. They were right next to the island. they were nearby. It was broad daylight. It's not, anyway, that just sort of jumped out at me.
I'm not even sure they were out of range of the weaponry on the beach.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They literally had just left. It's like they could have easily been taken out, because they had the mercenaries or whatever had some pretty heavy artillery. Mm. I mean, I think is there a scene with a big gun, or
50 cal gun on the back of a Jeep and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, so what we haven't talked about really yet is Rutger Hauer. Mm. And how he fits in and what his plan was and stuff, because it kind of shifts back and forth, and it's something about eternal life.
Yeah. So I got the impression that he was sort of ripping off this, because I think the scientists were Russian, and I think he was sort of ripping off their research to develop this elixir, this drug. Mm-hmm. Which is why he sent his guys in to wipe them out, basically, after once he's got the thing. But I don't know what was going on with all the counselors and stuff, because he was tied into that as well. These guys committing suicide / being that was all bizarre stuff. So the thing about the virus, I think he wasn't actually either wasn't aware of or just wasn't bothered by, as long as he got his bit.
Kind of wants this immortality, but I mean regenerative properties, wasn't it? They found the regenerative properties in the salamander.
That's it.
And they've synthesized something, and they're going to sell it like to the highest, to people who are really wealthy, make a fortune out of it. And they want to, so he wants it cures him is the first thing. And then it's the idea is you keep getting treatments and you'll never die, I think, is the idea. And that's a pretty lofty concept for what is basically a men on a mission, virus action movie. Yeah, exactly. It's like it's such a weird combination. And then they sort of cut back to, and they, because it's Rutger Hauer, they felt like they had to open the film with him.
Hmm.
And close the film with him, and then cut back and forth every now and again to sort of spend some time with him, even though he's completely separate from the rest of the action. It's like it's a different level to the film that they haven't got the time or the inclination to develop fully. Like they just the film. It's kind of, there's an element to it being necessary because it's kind of the motivating factor behind some of the action. But at the same time, it's underdeveloped.
Yeah, I did like that final shot, though. Because there are moments during that sort of final sort of shootout, I'm thinking, is he going to make it? Is it going to be like one of those things where it's just like a failed attempt, and he's just like, no. I just like the fact that that shot of Rutger Hauer just looking up with a very worried look on his face. I just thought that it was a good capper for the film.
And another thing I just want to mention before we wrap up is, so when Michael Madsen's character is properly introduced in his compound or whatever, his house or whatever, they play the worst hip hop, swearing
God.
For the sake of it
oh
track.
Oh my God, that track.
It's that terrible. Track.
What up, motherfucker? That's literally the whole lyrics, isn't it? I'm a motherfucker, you're a motherfucker.
And it doesn't sound good. It's kind of, it's what's funny is because, Straight to the Edge on Search and Destroy wasn't the best produced song, but it had some charm and, it had that nice hook or whatever. This is kind of a similar thing of they've got this cheap option, cheap. Trying to imitate something in the, like the other one was trying to imitate a style and whatever, and be really over the top and full on about it. But it's just made you cringe and think,
it really is horrible. What is funny as well is because like you, I tend to watch these films with the subtitles on, even if they're in English. So all the lyrics are coming up at the bottom of the screen, and as I say, it's just like one expletive after the other. There's hardly any actual other word, you know.
There's not actually a lot of swearing in the movie apart from that. And why a hip hop track in this particular context?
but at the same time, I could really see that being the sort of music that Michael Madsen's character listens to. It's the sort of scumbag he is. So yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that thing. Jesus, yeah, that really stood out. That track. It's almost worth watching the film just to hear that. Okay, so we've had a good little chinwag about this film. So how are we going to score it? You mentioned at the top of this review films like Diamond Cartel and what was the other one?
Code of Cain.
You know, it is definitely of that ilk, but I think the action scenes are pretty decently shot. So I'm giving this a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that there are aspects of it that are much better, much more professionally executed, let's say, than some of what we saw in those other films. I'm actually going to go a 7 because I think it's really that's kind of entertaining and well worth seeing.
It certainly is. It's certainly entertaining. Definitely worth seeing, we think. So this is available on Amazon Prime again, as all our films this week are.
I just want to mention that Rutger Hauer died a few years ago. This is actually quite an old film. I think it was originally shot in 2010.
Yeah.
Or came out in 2012. But we've only just got it. So it's a new release. Over here, it's taken such a long time to get it.
Yeah, but it's an interesting curiosity and worth checking out.
And I've been looking out for it for ages, and I'm seeing.
Our short shot this week is Cargo. When a new employee makes a discovery about the cargo he's loading in a warehouse, he falls foul of the management. This is... pretty brief short, Rich. It's about 8 minutes long, I think.
6 minutes.
6 minutes, even.
Yeah.
So this is one of those ones which gets to the point pretty quickly. It does quite a good job of sort of setting the scene. This guy, ex-service guy, sort of separated from his wife and daughter, wants to get close to them, so he's taking this job, you know, in this town. But unfortunately, his curiosity gets the better of him when he discovers that the packages that he's loading onto a pallet in this warehouse seem to be leaking blood, and much to the consternation of his new boss, he decides to have a peek inside the packages. Rich, what do you make of this one?
Yeah, so basically it's a fight short, essentially, but it's a slightly extended one. There's a little bit more story, but it's basically two scenes or one scene spread over two locations, and we're introduced to the lead character who doesn't say anything, I don't think, in the whole film, played by Joel Barham. Now it's this film is his project that he wanted to get off the ground, and it was he wanted to make something in the style of, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger movies from the 80s kind of thing, you know, tough guys kind of movie. That's what he was going after. And so we essentially have a fight. The film builds up to a fight between him and the head of security, I think he is, played by a bodybuilder called Chris Gethin. Now the film itself is found on Chris Gethin's YouTube account, but I think it's Joel Barham's project, so it's kind of like a dual thing. I don't know if Barham wanted to build it as like a springboard for a potential action hero career, but I think it's definitely Gethin who gets your attention, gets noticed. I mean, villains always do, generally, don't they?
He's got a great story in this, isn't he? He starts rambling off this story, which builds up to the punchline of, like, you know, something I just couldn't unsee. and they, you know, which is exactly what you've done, kind of thing, which I thought was really good. It's a really good sort of meandering story to get to that point. But
I didn't quite kind of get what he was saying there. It's kind of what? But it's curious. Joel, I thought this looked like it was a British production.
Is it Australian?
Well, no, it's British, but it seemed like it was British. Chris Gethin, I think, is British, and the scene in the warehouse, the guy who's showing him the ropes, has what seems to be the most fake American accent.
I thought it was Australian. I thought it was Australian.
Maybe Australian. Maybe it's Australian. I looked. When I looked up Joel Barham, and because he did like a crowdfunding thing for this film, and he shot a little short saying a little video saying about what his aspirations were for the production. So, and I think he is American or Canadian. So that was quite interesting because I just figured it was British. Even when they go to the house, it looks like a British house, rather than, an American kind of place. But yeah, I think the story's quick and simple, simple or fine. It feels like more of a proof of concept. There is a conclusion and a scope for more development. But yeah, it does have a beginning, middle, and end, which I like.
Yeah,
it's got some good. It's got a good brief fight scene. Mm-hmm. It's not great, but I think it's definitely worth your worth a couple of minutes of your time, and it introduces you to some performers that you wouldn't be familiar with otherwise. I think unless you're in the bodybuilding community, in which case you're probably familiar with Chris Gethin and what he does. But I think it definitely stands out. It's got the poster, or not? There isn't a poster, but on YouTube, like the graphic, the title graphic, Cargo. Catches your attention.
It does come across like sort of 80s action kind of thing, that graphic. I think this is very well written and well acted for the most part. I think the fight scenes could be tighter. We've definitely seen better.
It's not hammered down, is it?
It's not hammered down. It's not the choreography is okay. It's pretty good. It's quite good sort of close quarter stuff.
Yeah.
But it just need to be tighter, be faster. Really, they might have got away with undercranking it a bit if but anyway. But this as you say, it does stand out a bit because sort of the story works. The actual discovery in the box, I thought that was actually really well done. I thought that scene at the beginning was great. I thought it was a very sort of gruesome sort of thing that he finds, and that sort of just asks bigger questions, doesn't it? It's like, well, how, how, why?
Yeah, what's that all about? Yeah,
exactly.
It's unfortunate to say, but I think the weakest part of the film is Joel Barham himself as the hero, because he's not very. You're not particularly drawn to him. He's not particularly charismatic, and therefore you're not as interested in his story. So I think that's where it sort of fumbles a bit, I think.
Yeah,
which is a shame. I mean, but it's a good project. Good, it's a good little film. But it is certainly Chris Gethin who stands out,
As you'd expect for a baddie. But yes, so we'll put the link to the film in the footnotes. Do check it out. As Rich said, it's only 6 minutes long, and it does sort of deal with a lot of story in those 6 minutes, so definitely worth checking out. Our DTV throwback this week is Shakedown. In the middle of a devastating Los Angeles earthquake, terrorists and bank robbers battle over a deadly supervirus. So that's what IMDb describes this film as. I wanted to sort of elaborate a bit more. I didn't have time to write something. But isn't it always the way, Rich? You're an FBI agent who specializes in deadly diseases. You find out that a renowned colleague is now working for the leader of a death cult. And when you go to complete a sting mission that's going to sort of capture him at a bank, in come a bunch of armed robbers, as well as the death cult's followers, a big shootout ensues, and then there's a fucking big earthquake which wrecks everything on top. It's just one of those days in Los Angeles, isn't it?
It's just
a Tuesday. So we've got two leads in this. One is Erica Elaniak. And remind me who the guy is. I can't remember.
It's Wolf Larson.
Wolf Larson, that's right. And the pair are really good in this. In fact, the whole film is fantastic. It's not brilliantly, but you know, it's not a huge budget or anything like that. But I think it handles everything with gusto. It really does. Even the earthquake scene, where they could have just got away with just, you know, shaky cam, but you know, you got people being crushed by sort of boulders and bits of ceiling and all sorts going on.
Combined with footage from what film?
I've no idea, actually.
What was that? Earthquake, starring really? Charlton Heston.
So we got these external shots which show the devastation of the downtown Los Angeles, and they seem to be a little bit out of focus, and it's almost
very grainy.
Yeah, it's very grainy. That's the word I'm looking for. And it looks like they've taken a print, like an old print of something, and tried to blow it up so it matches the aspect ratio of what they're going for. But it really did sort of stand out as being not part of the film, that's for sure. But Erica Elaniak is superb in this. You know, I think she was hard done by with Under Siege. I think she's much better in this than she was in Under Siege. You know,
the funny thing is, she's basically performing the same function, playing a variation on the same role, because this is Die Hard, basically, mixed with that Under Siege element of her accompanying the hero as he goes about trying to take out the terrorists. Yes,
but she's a lot more assured in this one. You know, she's not an action heroine by any stretch of the imagination.
No,
but she's got balls, basically.
Yeah, and she's kind of more I can't remember the name of her character, but in Under Siege, you know, she starts out and she's all scared and whatever. And by the end, she's like lock and load, you know, it's like they did that. Like, they try to give her that little arc, and she's much more of that, like you say, tougher character here. She's, you know, not scared to walk in on a bunch of gangsters who are with her brother at the beginning of the film, you know, and do what needs to be done, stand up for stuff. Yeah, she's great. She is a good character, but it is that kind of, mold, you know, as we had with the Fifth Execution, you know, this is a film which adds in several different elements, yeah. Including that the old MacGuffin of the deadly virus that's going to wipe out the whole world kind of thing. it's good. You enjoyed it, yeah.
Oh, very much so. It's even got Fred Dyer in this, who was from the TV series
Hunter.
Hunter. I was going to say Canon, but no, it's a different one. Yeah, so he was in Hunter, and what was that film he did? Death Before Dishonor, which is a crazy film as well.
I want to see that. I've never seen it. I've always seen the poster, but I've never actually.
That's a good one to cover. And he plays the in any other film, he would be the shady. Sort of like official guy who, you know, trying to cover his tracks kind of thing. So like, I'll just blow them all to hell and let the dust settle. But he's actually quite an honorable character, and he actually does what he says he's going to do. You know, he actually follows through on his promises, which was
Yeah,
I was just going to say, it's very refreshing to see, you know, because he kind of watched him sort of, and he's going, yes, of course, we'll get a helicopter to you to rescue you and shit like this. And thinking, is he though? You know, is he going to follow through? But he does. You know, he's got a guy on the phone straight away going, "Yeah, get the helicopter." You know, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I totally enjoyed it.
So it's like the in Under Siege. You know, they cut back to the Pentagon, and you'd have Nick Mancuso as the slimy, shady guy, and then like Kurtwood Smith and a couple of the others as like the more sex ones. So Fred Dreyer's kind of basically on that side of the table, and it's you know, all these big meetings are obviously taking place in small rooms and stuff, because it's a low budget Roger Corman production. And I saw this when it came out in 2002, and it did make an impression, but I didn't remember anything about it much. our friend Dave Wayne wrote about it recently for the Schlock Pit. Oh. And it kind of made me think, oh, we should revisit it here. And I think I say this quite a lot with some of the, you know, movies that we revisit, some of my old favorites and stuff, but it really does stand up. It's packed with action. I mean, it starts off slowly, and I wasn't a bit open the opening credits.
You mentioned the opening credits. You mentioned the opening credits. It starts off horribly.
Yeah.
Horribly. Those opening credits have not dated well. This sort of weird footage of terrorists and jihadist stuff going on, and the way it's shot and the way
and the voiceover as well.
The voice, oh my God. I was thinking,
Ron Perlman is the baddie, everyone.
Yeah, Ron Perlman is
which is pretty cool.
Yeah, a very fit Ron Perlman as well. I mean, you know, he's quite slim in this, isn't he? You know, he's sort of not as bulky as he usually appears.
But, yeah, when did he do Hellboy? Was that a few years after around the same time? I'm not sure, but
yeah. So this is a long time after Beauty and the Beast, obviously. But But yeah, no, he's really good in this as well as you'd expect, and you know, this film's quite dark in the sort of things they do. You know, he's got the sort of mass executions going on and things like this.
Because he's like this cult leader who's sort of instigating this, stealing the virus and. And then that's combined with why they go to the building and why, oh, they're going to the building to do an exchange or something with the FBI or what's going on there. I can't remember what the setup is.
So the scientist who'd robbed the CDC and stolen the virus had put it into the bank vault.
Yes, that's right. Of course.
Safety deposit box because they were holding his family as hostage.
Yeah.
And he wanted some sort of leverage. And he'd also informed on them. He's the one who tipped off the FBI saying, this is going down at the thing.
That ties in with Erica Eleniak's brother, who's
a security guard at the bank, who's been strong-armed by some guys he owes money to actually help them do a bank robbery.
Mm-hmm.
And so
those two things converge, and then there's an earthquake as well.
Yeah, because Ron Perlman's turned up with his whole entourage. See, that bit I thought was really good as well, because Ron Perlman's character sort of goes, "Oh, we got visitors or something," and he got these like three estate cars, you know, sort of camper van kind of things in the car park, and just all these guys sort of pouring out of it into the bank. It's absolute snafu for an FBI operation, basically.
What do you think of the action?
I thought the action was mostly pretty decent, you know. We do have to also say that the air vents in this bank are so big.
They're enormous.
Well, they're like the TARDIS because they're definitely bigger on the inside than they are on the outside.
They're not like trying to wedge themselves. They're just crouching and wandering. They actually run through them, can't they?
And they support their weight and everything. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. But I thought the action was well handled as well.
Did you like all the sort of John Woo kind of stylistic touches?
Some nice little bits, sort of diving across and sort of shooting as you go.
Sliding down things.
The elevator, the bit with the escalator. That was really done well, where he slides down, sort of, you know, shooting people.
And there was the bit where he goes, he's in the elevator, and he uses his belt to hold on to the cord, to the wire, and he slides down and then he shoots them as he goes past. And there's some other, even Erica Eleniak does, it looks like her own stunt where she rides down an escalator on a table or something.
That's right.
I thought was really good. Yeah. And there's lots of, there's one bit where, I mean, there's not really any martial arts in the film, but there's one bit where this guy who's clearly very talented comes in and does some amazing sort of spins and kicks, which was quite nice. So I would have liked to have seen more of that, but it is a very, it's a very gunfire heavy film, and it's one of those ones where you think they're just not running out of ammunition at all.
Yeah, if you could have a drinking game, sort of like how many times past 11 do they shoot, basically. Yeah, no, there are sort of few sort of nods to sort of reality when he does run out of bullets and have to sort of pick up one of the dead guy's guns and things like that to carry on. So
he was pretty good, I thought. Wolf Larson,
yeah, Wolf Larson is
in the lead role.
Yeah.
And yeah. Him and Eric, like you say, he and Erica Olenek had a nice sort of chemistry between their two characters. Ron Perlman is a good villain. Again, Ron Perlman kind of reminds you of Tommy Lee Jones. They're kind of those same kind of craggy sort of side. But he doesn't go, it's not the same kind of a performance as Tommy Lee Jones in Under Siege. It's much more serious, intense kind of villain. I mean, he's not a fun villain. He's kind of just a a cold psycho kind of cult leader kind of thing. It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing, but he does give it his full, he gives it his all.
His dialogue is all like, are you ready to meet God and all this sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, it's pretty
cool. I like the fact the title has got a double meaning with the fact that it refers to the bank robbery and as well as the earthquake. I think that's quite fun. Brian Katkin, who was the director, I think did a really good job. Did you notice there were 5 credited screenwriters?
I didn't actually, no.
So it makes me wonder if this was like composited from different scripts or something, and then they had to credit it. Because even in the worst case scenario, a lot of films usually end up credited to one person, even if they've only done a rewrite or something of someone's earlier draft. You know, it's whatever happens, something enough gets changed, and they only give it up. Whereas this one is like, I think even like Toy Story 4 recently had several credited screenwriters because they're all, but that's like lots of jokes and stuff, probably lots of creative ideas. Whereas this is a Die Hard knockoff with a couple of, so why does it need 5 people to write the screenplay? I think not sure about, maybe that's where the different, this guy came up with the virus bit, this person came up. The original concept for the film was it would be an earthquake, an earthquake based film. That was where it started from. I think probably Roger Corman had bought footage from Earthquake and said, right, we want to use this, make whatever you want.
Find a way to make this into a film. Yeah.
Yeah. And they did. And it's a great film. Not a lot of people have heard of it. There's not a lot of reviews out there. So I'm kind of saying, hey, you guys should check this out.
I'd never heard of it before. Yeah. But I'm glad we did. And I'm glad I sort of stuck with it after those horrible, horrible credits at the beginning, because they are awful.
Yeah, so it does take, it takes about 20 minutes to warm up, but then it's basically non-stop action. I mean, within reason, there's a lot going on in that following hour. You will not be disappointed if you're an action fan.
Absolutely, yeah. This certainly fits in with the sort of PM entertainment sort of stuff we've been covering recently.
It is. It's very much like that, I think. And what's interesting is that it's on a much smaller scale.
Yeah.
There's the locations are few again, but they're also very sparsely designed. You know, like the bank or whatever. It's very nondescript. Yeah. It could be just it's like grey walls and stuff, but you don't notice, you don't care. There's so much going on that you don't really pay attention to the sort of the lack of production design and stuff. It's just... Yeah,
which is kind of like Dark Green, which you covered a couple of episodes ago as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. So this is great fun. And again, it's funny, the DTV throwback section, we end up sort of talking more about that than anything else, because these films just are really interesting to talk about. So this is on Amazon Prime again, as all the films are this week. So please check it out. We'll put a link to the trailer in the footnotes. It's just good fun. It's a good fun action movie from 18 years ago. Try to check it out. And that's the end of the show. Please check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Rich does a good job of keeping everyone up to date with the DTV charts and sort of new releases. So check us out there. We'll also put sort of trailers and things when we get around to it. But thank you to Rich for joining me this week.
No problem at all.
And everyone, tune in again next time. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.